Okay, so we're going to continue on with a series that we've been doing on Ruth. This week is a study in integrity. And before I start here, I want you to kind of imagine this for a second. This is a strange start to this, but I want you to imagine this because I want us to understand as Christians how we are supposed to be. And sometimes we get pulled into something we shouldn't be in. And I'll explain all that in a minute. But imagine there's a football team. Let's pick, I think EF did okay this year, right? I don't really follow it, but I think they did. Suppose EF is invited to play a football game in West Virginia. They're actually offered prize money. And they look this place up online. They don't look that big or that tough. So yeah, we'll go there. So they go out there and they start the football game. Things are going great. You know, the other team receives the kickoff. They're 3-and-out. EF gets the punt, and they slowly drive down the field. They score a touchdown, kick the extra point. Things are going great. But they turn around as they're running off the field, high-fiving each other. They notice a scoreboard says the other team's got 10, and they have 2. They go, whoa, wait, time out. What's going on here? You know, they call the ref over. There's clearly some mistake there. We just scored a touchdown and kicked an extra point. And the ref looks, no, that's right. He said, how could that be right? He said, well, here we really prize the kicking game. Because of the nature of the area, and so we actually score things a little differently here. Touchdowns get a point, and the extra point gets a point, and a field goal would be 7 points. And they're like, look at this, this is nuts. And they said, well, they got 3-and-out. How they have 10 points? Oh, well, because we prize the kicking game so much, any punt that goes over 40 yards gets a point for every yard, and it was a 50-yard punt. So that's right, they're winning 10-2. Play ball, you know. And you're like, man, why in the world would I play that game? Well, oftentimes we end up playing that kind of game because the Christian faith was made to live beyond what we can see, what we can touch, and what we understand. And you know, when you become a Christian, it's kind of what you sign on for. There is a world beyond what I can see, touch, or understand. God is more all-knowing and impotent, omnipotent and omniscient. He knows more than I know. I never will fully be able to understand him. I try my best to understand him, but I'll never fully understand him. We know there's a spiritual world we can't touch. And we believe all this because we believe the teachings of Jesus Christ who told us this. The world will try to draw you into a show me, prove it, touch it, see it, let me understand. If I don't understand it, God can't be real. And whenever we play by those rules, we lose. The Proverbs actually says, don't answer a fool according to his own folly, or you'll become like him. I like the kind of the Americanized version of this. We don't really know who says this. Some people say it's Mark Twain. We can't prove it, but I love this one. Never argue with an idiot. They drag you down to their level and then beat you with experience. You know, anytime you end up into the realm of this, you lose. And the really dangerous thing is when you pull yourself in that realm. If you pray for healing and you get it, everything makes sense to you, right? When you pray for healing and you don't get it, all of a sudden God makes no sense. And we start trying to put God into that. I mean, we have to understand that in order to understand God, we're going to have to look beyond what we can see, what we can touch. And we're going to have to expand what we understand because God doesn't play by our rules, right? And so we have to understand that when we're looking at the Bible, one thing that I've learned, and I don't really have any place I can point to that shows me this, it just seems like since we've been doing, you know, these studies, especially the people of the Old Testament, that the Bible loves to teach in contrast. Jesus does it in his parables. You know, there's always two brothers, or there were two men, or there were three servants. There's always multiple people here. When we go and look in the books of the Bible, you know, like Esther and like Ruth, there's always more than one person there. And the purpose of that is to give us a contrast of the people. The problem is sometimes the most interesting people are the people who aren't following God because they seem to be doing more. The people who are following God seem to be a little bit more calm and they're not frantic. So it's kind of like the game of Survivor. It's always the nut that gets all the camera time because, you know, they're just so interesting to watch. And so sometimes we end up getting distracted by the person who's actually there to give a contrast to who we're supposed to be paying attention to. Let me put it this way. If we're ever going to see what heaven wants us to see, we need to look where God is looking, right? And there's nothing truer about that than the book of Ruth, because Ruth gives us this wonderful contrast between two people, Naomi and Ruth. But you have to kind of pay attention to Ruth to understand her. And Naomi's so distracting in the book because she's always the one talking. She's always the one doing. But remember, the book is named Ruth for a reason. It's not Naomi. It's Ruth. And Ruth has God's attention. And so Ruth needs to have our attention as well. So we need to contrast Ruth with Naomi and not say, well, if Naomi's doing that and it's in the Bible, it must be okay. That's really not true. Bible is not shy about putting people who are horrible examples there to be horrible examples, right? Not for us to emulate them. Even some good people like David do horrible things. It's like, oh, well, that must be okay with God. It's not okay. What we need to understand is heaven saying, don't do this, right? We need to look where God's looking to see what message he's trying to get to us. Okay, one more little caveat, we'll get right into it. This is a verse that always goes through my mind whenever I see scriptures like what we're going to get into. There is no wisdom, no insight, no plan that can succeed against the Lord. Can I get an amen, Mr. Saccone? So, you know, there are a lot of times people get plans, but when God gets into it, it doesn't matter. You know, when God's your plan A, you don't need a plan B, even though sometimes it seems like you should. So I say all that to say this, Naomi has a plan. And now, Naomi, to kind of backtrack a little bit, this whole story starts out with Naomi and her husband who leave the promised land, run away from the promise at the first sight of problem, a little bit of a famine, hasn't become severe yet, but they take off. They take a lot of their money, and they sell all their goods, and they go to a place they shouldn't have been, Moab. It's a sinful place, and they live there. They're not supposed to. You know, the Bible tells us don't do that. There's right there in Leviticus. Don't even associate with them. They're evil. But they do it anyway because they can make a fortune there, they think, and it's not as fun as they thought it was going to be in the promised land. But it doesn't turn out well. Her husband dies. Her two sons grow up, marry, and then they die. And suddenly she has nothing, and so she sells whatever she has left, and she heads back to Bethlehem, where she's from, in Israel. And that's kind of where we were last week, or 2 weeks ago. And so they head back, but one of the daughter-in-laws, Ruth, stays with her. And the reason Ruth stays with her is she's being attracted to God. She says, I'm going to make your God my God. She actually tells her that. So she has a heart that's turned to God, and we don't know why some people do, but I've met them. You know, at age 2 and a half, I know a young boy. He just was one of these people. His heart just turns to God. Some people do. It's amazing when that happens. They have some kind of spiritual DNA that just points to God, like a compass points north. And that's Ruth. You know, she has this, and she's feeling this calling, and she wants to be part of the living God's family, which is Israel at that time. It's the only place you can get it. Now, she had married into it briefly, but her husband died. And so she's coming back really as far as Israel's concerned as a Moabite, because they didn't even see that marriage. And so she's coming back in, but everybody knows she's the daughter-in-law of Naomi, who is Jewish. And so she's coming back just to be close to God. That's kind of where we were. And so Naomi is bitter and sitting around just complaining all the time about her life. And Ruth gets up and goes to work. You know, so she actually starts going off to pick up food for them, and she ends up gleaning the field of, it just so happens, a relative of theirs, Boaz, and there's something about her that catches Boaz's heart, and he starts just wanting to take care of her. And so he really goes out of his way to make sure she's taken care of. And where we ended off last week was it said that Ruth was allowed to stay in the fields and get the crops that she wanted all the way through the barley season and the wheat season. Now, I'm not a barley or a wheat farmer, so I don't know exactly how long that was, but it was probably a couple months. So for a couple months now, she's been going out every day, and Naomi understands that Boaz is being more generous to her than he should be. She gets it. And because Naomi is who Naomi is, she's thinking that Boaz must have designs on Ruth. It's just logical to her. Well, clearly he's gone out of his way. And so one day she says to Ruth, you know, my daughter, it is time that I found a permanent home for you so that you will be provided for. She said, I'm going to find you a husband, right? Which is funny because when this whole book started, she told Ruth she'd never find a husband in Israel. It was impossible. And you should just stay here. There's no sense in coming home. But now all of a sudden, I'm going to go find you a husband, just because she has her eye on one. Jewish mother-in-laws are amazing this way. they have this ability to find mates and mix them. And so she's seeing this all that. And she knows this is going to work, because clearly Boaz has been working his way up to get what he wants. And what he wants is clearly Ruth. Now, Boaz is middle-aged and maybe even beyond. He's probably in his 40s, maybe even as far as 50s. Ruth is 25, 26 or so. And so, he's apparently a slow mover. And Naomi's like, I'm going to have to give this guy a nudge because he's trying to get her, but he doesn't know how, poor soul. He needs the help from a Jewish mother-in-law. Here's the thing that I've noticed, though. Deceitful people assume everybody's deceitful. And I don't know if you know anybody like that. Do you know a manipulator? Anybody in your circle of friends or work or something that kind of like to manipulate people? Did you notice how they never trust anyone? You know why? Because they know their motives. And so they naturally look at other people with this distrust. I actually had a situation like this go on. You all know that I'm divorced and remarried. Well, my previous wife, not my good wife, my previous wife, got to make that clear. I'm driving, and we lived in Texas at the time. I'm driving down the road. I get this phone call from her, and I could tell by her voice that I'm about to catch it, you know? And I don't know why, which, by the way, to this day remains my life. You know, I was like, I'm always clueless why I'm about to catch it. But this time, I really didn't have a clue for a reason. And so out of the clear blue sky, she says, so what's your girlfriend's name in Dallas? Now, we lived in Dallas-Fort Worth area, but I didn't live in Dallas. I lived in Arlington. And I said, what are you talking about? I have a girlfriend in Dallas. Oh, you must, because your Sprint bill came and I opened it. And I see you made a call to this phone number in Dallas several times. In the evening, around lunchtime, in the afternoon, over the past week, I see several of them. And I just want to know who she is. And I think I have a right. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. What number is that? And she reads it off to me. And I said, it's not ringing any bells. Oh, it's ringing bells. And you're trying to stall. Don't try to stall. I said, well, did you call it? And she goes, did I call it? No, why would I want to talk to your girlfriend? I said, well, if you called it, then we would know who it is. I said, give me a second. And I put her on hold. And I dialed the phone number. And I clicked her back in. So we have this conference call going, you know, rings twice. Hello, Texas Irving Jeep and Dodge. Can I help you? And I said, I said, oh, okay, yeah. And so then I said, can I have maintenance? And she said, sure, let me patch you through. And as soon as she did, my then wife hung up. And so my Jeep had been in the repair shop the week before, so that's why all this had happened. But the next day, I'm actually at house by myself, and I thought that was weird. You know, I mean, I know that everybody can be suspected of anything. I'm not saying I lived this perfect life, but like, it was weird that suddenly she thought I was cheating on her because of what she found in a phone bill. I would never think about even looking in a phone bill, and then all of a sudden, a little bell went off. I thought, wait a minute. I wonder what her phone looks like, you know? So I went to the house phone right there by the desk, and I picked it up and went to the caller log, and it was wiped clean. Well, that's odd. Not even the phone call she made to me from that phone was in it. But we had four phones in the house, all independent. So I went to each one of them, which two of them were in kids' rooms, and checked, and every one of them, son of a gun, the call log had been wiped clean. I mean, well, that's very peculiar, you know. I doubt my kids were doing this. And so then I went down to the folder, you know, the file cabinet has all of our bills. You know, I kind of keep bills for a year or so, some of us longer. And so I opened it up, and there was my Sprint folder with all of my bills in it for the past year. She had a different phone, a different service as AT&T, and that folder was empty. And all of a sudden I started thinking, huh. And a few months later, I ended up moving out, and that kind of started the divorce process. But, you know, the whole thing is, my point is that sometimes deceitful people tell you what they're doing by accusing you of doing the very same thing. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. That's kind of a side sermon. That one's free. No charge for that one. But in case you have some in your life, you might want to pay attention to what they're accusing you of. Let me go on now with where Naomi's plan goes. So Boaz, she says, is a close relative of ours, and he's been very kind by letting you gather grain with his other young women. Tonight, I happen to know he's going to be winnowing barley at the threshing floor all by himself. And I was like, man, how about that? Why in the world was Boaz alone? And how would she know that? And those two things like, you know, pop out. Like, why in the world? Well, the reason Boaz would have been alone was because at the end of the harvest, there was this thing that's declared in Leviticus called the Omer sacrifice, where you actually sacrifice, basically giving gratitude to God for your harvest. And it was oftentimes also done around a feast for the family. So the head of the household would offer up the Omer, and usually the family would gather together, and they'd have a feast before it. And it was to be brought to the priest on the first of the Sabbath. So that was Saturday. So Friday night, it was kind of traditional that the family would kind of have a festival party. And then the next day, the head of the house, which would, of course, been Boaz, would take that to the temple. And the fact that he's alone, by the way, is kind of sad, because that tells you that Boaz had no family. So I want you to picture this. He's a very rich man. He's 45, 47, something like that. And he has no family at all. And here's this great festival that everybody he knows is celebrating with their family, and he's alone. And then we start feeling a little bit sad for Boaz, you know. So he's all by himself, but he does it. You know, Boaz is faithful and Boaz is righteous. And so he always does that. And so Naomi knows this because he was a relative. She knew what he did. And she probably put out the little feelers because this is what the Jewish mother-in-laws do, you know, find out, they talk. And so she knew he'd be alone. And she says, this is a perfect time. And she says, now, do as I tell you. Take a bath, put on perfume, and dress in your nicest clothes. You know, put on that good dress. You know, that one from Moab, not the Israel. Put the good one on, you know, from Moab. The one that's going to catch his eye. And I want you to put on your perfume. I want you to put on the makeup. I want you to look great. And then I want you to go to the threshing floor, which, by the way, is where they beat the barley and have all the separation. Because, of course, that's how everybody dresses, to go to the threshing floor. This is like tradition. You know, go, by all means, go there. And says, but, just giving further instructions here, we say, don't let Boaz see you until he's finished eating and drinking. Because it's not enough we're going to take advantage of a lonely man. We're going to let him be a little drunk first, right? So we're going to make sure he's drunk, happy, and alone. Wait till the loneliness kind of sets in. And that's when we're going to put our plan into place. She's thought this thing through. Be sure to notice where he lies down, because you're going to put the lights out. It's going to be dark, right? It's not like around here where you have, everything's lit up. I was in a church once where they cut off all the lights to try to make a point. Everybody's sitting there with their iPads. It's like, you know, okay, turn off your iPads. No point was made. All right. But in those days, man, dark was dark, right? So he blew out the lights. It was gone. And then go, watch this, uncover his feet and lie down there. And then he will tell you what to do. You know, don't worry. He'll take it from there. He'll get the hint. You know, and so watch where he is. And this is a kind of a strange thing. And it has caused theologians a lot of problems over the years, because what it looks like she's doing, we don't want to admit she's doing. She's basically pimping out her daughter-in-law. That's really clearly what this is. Right? She's trying to put them into a compromised situation because she knows Boaz. And because, of course, he's a lonely man, and she's sure she knows lonely men, too. And because he's been drinking, and she's sure she knows drunk lonely men, he's not going to be able to resist this beautiful woman. But she also knows the next day he's going to have so much guilt that he's going to marry her. And so this is a whole plan designed to marry her. But the greatest thing about it for Naomi was he'd have to marry her because Naomi would have information that she could hold over the righteous Boaz's head. I want you to see that, this whole thing. It's not just to get it accomplished, but it's to get it accomplished in a certain way so Naomi stays in charge. So I just want you to, she's got this plan, and she's got this whole thing worked out. And poor Ruth, you know, she's kind of innocent a little bit, and she doesn't know Israeli ways, and so she's like listening to everything her mother-in-law is telling her, right? You need to know this is the way it's done. By the way, it's never done this way. Some theologians have tried to say, oh, that was a tradition. No, it's not. It doesn't show up anywhere in the Bible except here. It doesn't show up anywhere in the ancillary teaching. It doesn't show up in any rabbinical teaching of the rabbis of the day. This just never happened. This was not some kind of a traditional thing that they did, you know, like running around the maypole or something, you know. This was not like that. This was simply connived by Naomi, and she was going to use Ruth's innocence and trust to put her into a compromised situation. And don't worry, the guy will tell you what to do next. We got this whole thing worked out. Now watch what Ruth says. I will do everything you say. And she will, to the letter, because Ruth is no dummy. She absolutely, positively knows what Naomi wants her to do. And a little seduction would be nice. You know, you can amp it up. I'm not going to tell you to do it, of course, but, you know, because we all want to act later like that was a shock this happened. I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you, what happened next. I have no idea that would happen, right? So we want to have that plausible deniability. So she's not going to give her individual instructions, but if Ruth doesn't know how to do it, Boaz will. Boaz will figure it out from there. And so she's trying to do that, and Ruth says, okay, I'll go do what you say, but Ruth is no dummy. And she knows exactly what's going on, but Ruth, you'll watch, does never compromise anything about her character. What Naomi did not count on was the moral character of Boaz and Ruth. She threw them in a situation that 99% of the population would fall for, but she happened to be dealing with that 1% of the population that was totally righteous, totally committed to God's teachings, and would not compromise anything. So he put them in a compromised situation, and they did not compromise. It's an amazing thing. So, after Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, you know, that gets you feeling better, right? He laid down at the far end of the pile of grain and he went to sleep. And then Ruth came quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. I want you to picture this guy sleeping. Around midnight, he suddenly woke up and turned over, and he was surprised to find a woman lying at his feet. It's like, no kidding. You know, I don't know. You know, I was a single man for a long time. I never went to bed and woke up with a woman lying at my feet. It just like never happened, right? And it's just like, I have to pray tomorrow, but my prayers have already been answered. I don't know, you know, but he can't see who she is. He knows, you know, he can smell the perfume and, you know, touches with his feet. You know, he knows, but he's like, I don't know who that is. And so he says, who are you? And she says, I am your servant, Ruth. Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer. That was a phrase that Naomi would have given her. Right? So she says this phrase, that you are my family's redeemer. What in the world does that mean? Well, there was a Leviticus law that Naomi was counting on here. And it doesn't really apply to this situation, but you know how law is. I don't know if you've ever been in court, but they take precedent and they apply it to new situations, you know. And so, although the law that was laid down in Leviticus was a little bit different, it kind of covers this situation. In Leviticus, it says, if you have some brothers and one of them dies and leaves a widow, the other brother needs to marry her into the family, back into the family. Because in those days, ladies, and this may really bother you, but it was true in those days, women couldn't get inheritance. So all that stuff that her husband had would go back to the other brother. By marrying her, he gives it back to her, right? So he redeems her and gives her back what she's rightfully entitled. That's the idea. So what it's saying is brothers not only can do that, they need to do that. That's a commandment. And so because Boaz was a relative, he had a legal claim to do this. He was allowed to do this. He was allowed to marry her, even though she's a Moabite. He's allowed to marry her and redeem her. Now, here's what really gets interesting. At that moment, the family land that they left comes back to Ruth, and by extension, to Boaz. So this is a two-for-one, you can't lose deal. You get a young, pretty wife, and by the way, you'll be even richer when it's over, right? So this is kind of a really, really good deal. So Boaz sees what's being offered to him here. And he understands, by the way, when she says all this, he quickly understands this is all Naomi, and you'll see that in a second. He knows this was Noah. Her fingerprints are all over this. But what Boaz looks at is beyond what's being offered to him for the night to what is being offered to him for life. And he says, you know what? I'm not going to compromise my beliefs and my righteousness because what's being offered to me is a lot better than that. I'm going to go after what's being offered to me for a life. And so he takes a look and he says, the Lord bless you. You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man. You could have. She's beautiful. Any man who would be offered this would quickly understand what was being offered, right? When she marries back into Israel, she's entitled to that land, or her husband would be. You could have gone anywhere, he says, but you came to me. I'm an old man, and you still come to me. I get that. He says, now don't worry about a thing. I will do what is necessary for everyone in town knows you're a virtuous woman. He says, you've got a reputation of being a virtuous woman, and I'm not going to ruin that. I will do what's necessary without ruining your reputation. We're going to do this right. There is one problem. Even while it's true that I'm one of your family who could redeem you, there is another man who is more closely related to you than I am. So what you're saying is true, but there's someone else who has another claim before mine. I can't circumvent that because then I'm breaking God's law. Right? Naomi would have known about that relative too, by the way. She knew exactly what she was doing. She didn't want that relative. Boaz was rich, and she thought she could manipulate Boaz. That's why they didn't go to this other relative and present this situation, because they wanted Boaz. She wanted Boaz. No, Naomi wanted Boaz. So he says, look, there's another guy who has a prior claim. I didn't even know this was going to be offered to me, but I'm very interested, and we're going to do this God's way. We're not going to do this Naomi's way. We're going to do it God's way. So stay here tonight, and in the morning, I'll go talk to him. Now, if he's willing to redeem you, okay, let him marry you. But if he's not willing to, then as surely as the Lord lives, I will. I want this. I would love to marry you. Because he's been watching her for months. He knows her character. The whole town's talking about her character. This is amazing. And Moabite is the talk of the town because of her virtue. You know, this just shows you who Ruth is. That's what I'm saying. If you're paying attention to Naomi, you miss who Ruth is. Ruth is amazing. She's got a heart tuned to God. Boaz sees that, and that's as attractive to him as her beauty and her youth. He sees her for what she is. He says, I will definitely do that. You go ahead, just stay here till morning. You know, it's dark out there and it's dangerous. Stay there. And then he says, bring your cloak and spread it out. And he measures out 6 scoops of barley into the cloak. This is like the next morning when they wake up. It measures out 6 scoops of barley into the cloak and places it on her back. Because, you know, apparently Boaz knows something that I just never knew. And that is that chicks dig barley. Because every time you turn around, he's giving her more barley. And it worked. It worked. I'm like, man, all these years I've been buying roses. You know, this should have been given barley. Victoria never told me. I didn't know. So anyway, so he lines up. But look, there's a reason why he does this, right? Because he knows full well who sent her here. And she's going to be pissed when she finds out her plan didn't go off. And so he wants to send her home in such a way that she won't get so angry. So Ruth, she goes into town. And when Ruth goes back to her mother-in-law, Naomi says, gee, what happened, my daughter? You know, like, what could have possibly happened last night? Gee, I wonder. You know, she's expecting, I don't know what, tears or you know, just big story. Instead, Ruth tells her everything that happened. That must have really freaked her out, you know. And then she says, and he gave us 6 scoops of barley and said, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. This was a shot at Naomi. He's letting her know, I know who sent you. And I know she's expecting something. She's not getting what she wants. Give her barley. Go ahead and take her some barley. Give her that. All right. And Naomi, she kind of adjusts because she's good at this. You know, she's rolled with the punches before. She's had plans go awry. But, you know, at least it's not dead. At least it's not over. And so she says, just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens, because that man will not rest until he has settled things today. We've put the bug in his ear now, and he's going to do it. And he is going to do it, by the way. He really is. Naomi thinks she has set everything in motion she needs to accomplish this. I've done it. But if you follow Naomi, you're going to come away with a bad thought that God wants us to manipulate in order to get things accomplished. The fact is, God could only have blessed their marriage because they obeyed his statutes. Now, Naomi may have succeeded in what she wanted. She may have done a compromise, and she may have made Boaz marry Ruth. But that wasn't God's plan for them. It wasn't just these two are going to get married. That wasn't it. God had a far greater plan for Ruth. Ruth becomes King David's great-grandmother. Ruth becomes ancestor to Jesus Christ. There is a plan far greater than just this marriage to Boaz in God's plan. And God had been working towards that since the moment she stumbles into his field, just by so happens, right? God's been working on that and opening their hearts to each other. That was going to happen without Naomi's meddling. That was going to happen. But God had a plan which was far, far beyond what Naomi could even begin to conceive. And God said, I will bless them because they stayed true to my statutes. There's a Psalm 119. It's the longest psalm in the Bible. If anybody ever asks you to pick a psalm and read it, don't pick 119 by chance. You know, stay away from that one. Go to 23 or something. Like if you're in a Bible study, that's a long psalm to read. It starts with everything starts with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and they have a whole section on it. It's very long. But it's kind of like a statutes psalm. Because all throughout it, David is talking about how wonderful it is to follow God's statutes. Statutes, by the way, is his teaching and his guidelines, right? All that is the statute. You could call all the Bible his statutes. So in Psalm 119, he says this, blessed are those who keep his statutes and seek him with all their heart. They do no wrong, but follow his ways. You have laid down precepts that are to be fully obeyed. And then he goes on. This is like, you know, almost like David later is talking about his great-grandma. How can a young person stay on the path of purity? Here's how, by living according to your word. Oh, how I love your word. It's my meditation all day. Your commandments make me wiser than my enemies, which is a good thing to be, by the way. If people are trying to get you, it's good to be wiser than they are. The commandments are forever mine. I have more insight than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. And the teachers got me this far, but I kept studying your word. True story, by the way. Whatever you learn here is nothing compared to what God will teach you in your own Bible study. Keep going. Don't stop here. Your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than my elders because I have obeyed your precepts. I'm doing things my father Jesse never dreamed of. For one reason and one reason only, I follow your word. And then he says this, you've rejected all those who wander from your statutes. Their deceitfulness is useless. That's Naomi. She's got all this deceitful. It's useless to God. God doesn't need her. Do you know that God doesn't need you working things out for him? I don't know if you knew that, because sometimes we try to help him out a little bit, you know? If we do this and this, then God can finally do that miracle I've been praying for, but I need to do this, this, and this in order to make that happen. God doesn't need you meddling. It's useless to him. He doesn't need it. And that's what David's saying here. And so what God is saying is, he says, I'm blessing them, and I'm going to bless them and bless their marriage. And by the way, what Boaz does next is beautiful. We'll get to that next week. I mean, he handles this perfectly. But the reason they're able to do that is because they stay true to the righteousness of God. That's the only reason this worked. They have what you can call Christian integrity. Now, that's a word that gets thrown around a lot. And a lot of times, people don't even understand what integrity means. And you can understand why they can't understand it in this day and age. I don't know how many people that I know have it. And it's really kind of a lost thing, because people don't seem to value it the way they used to. You know, there was a reason why it used to be a handshake was all you would need to finish a deal, because people had integrity. They had personal integrity, and that's really, really gone. But here's how you can know that you are really a Christian, in case you're wondering. It's you obey his commandments even when no one else is looking. It would have been so easy for them to compromise and get away with it. No one knew they were there, but they didn't, because that's what integrity is. What is it? What is integrity? It's who you are when no one else is looking. If you want to know what your integrity is, just ask yourself, if no one were here, what would I do? If I knew I could get away with it, what would I do? Right? That's what integrity is. Now, if you remember, and the way you keep integrity is you keep your focus on God. You know, I talked about how you need to keep your focus where God's focus is. Well, you need to keep your focus on God. If you remember the story of Joseph when he gets tempted by Potiphar's wife, you know, it's kind of a similar situation in some way. He was suddenly forced into an uncompromising situation, or a compromised situation. This is funny, by the way, because oftentimes we put ourselves deliberately in them so we have plausible deniability as to why we failed. I don't know if you've ever done this. Maybe you're all more righteous than I am. But I've actually put myself in a situation where I knew I'd fall, and then I could later say, well, God, what was it expect me to do? I know people, for instance, who get drunk just so they can go do things and later blame it on the alcohol. Maybe you don't know anybody like that, but I actually know them. I was so drunk last night, I was out of my mind. Look, I've been drunk a lot in my life. I maybe shouldn't confess that from the pulpit. Not lately, but I have been in my life. I've always known what I was doing. I mean, it's an excuse, I think. I mean, I don't know. I guess some people get what they call blackout drunk, and maybe I just don't. You know, I guess that Irish blood keeps that from happening to me. I don't know. But I just really have always known. I've blamed alcohol many times, but that's a lie. You know, sometimes we manipulate ourselves into a position where we can fail and later say, well, it was because of this. So integrity puts that out the window. But beyond that, when someone else gets you in that position, you still don't fail. How does that happen? You know, because, I mean, honestly, for Boaz and for Ruth, you know, they weren't at fault. They were being manipulated by a master manipulator. Well, the same thing happened to Joseph. You know, Joseph has a situation where he's the head of the house in that Potiphar has put him in charge of, and Potiphar's wife thinks he's pretty hot, nice, hot young guy, and so she keeps trying to seduce him, and he keeps staying away from her. He got to the point where he had somebody follow him around. He actually, you stay with me, because he was actually going out of his way to make sure that she wouldn't seduce him, because he knew he's human. You know, he's a slave. He doesn't get conjugal visits, and he's a young guy. He knows he's human, and says, I need you here to make sure I don't fall. That's a sign of integrity, right? But one day, somehow, she manipulates it, so everybody's out of the house except him. You know, paid him off, whatever. Sent his bodyguard away. And then she catches him in the bedroom, and she's trying to seduce him. And she's basically saying, you know, come on, let's do this. And what Joseph says is instructive. He says, there's no one greater in this whole house than I am. Potiphar hasn't kept anything back from me except for you, because you're his wife. But watch what he says. He doesn't say, what if you get caught? He doesn't say, what if you get pregnant? He doesn't say, I'm really not attracted to you. He doesn't say any of these things. Watch what he says. Watch where he goes. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? See? Yeah. Every other excuse he could have thrown up, she had accounted for. She didn't see this one coming. You won't get pregnant. I won't get pregnant. Because no, we don't. When we get caught, don't worry. She had an excuse lined up. I promise you, because people manipulate do that. They have A, B, C. I got all your arguments covered. And he hit her one she'd never seen before. How can I do this wickedness against God? Because Joseph wasn't stupid. He had risen from slavery to the head of the house. He knew that was God. He knew that. He said, I'm here because of God. You want me to sin against God? Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. There's nothing you can offer me that's worth that to me. See, this is that integrity that I'm talking about. This is the integrity that's there. It's inside of you, and it's there because you've got your focus on the right place. Your focus on God. Nothing's going to be able to come up with an excuse against that. The question is, will you keep your integrity before the Lord? Would you all please pray with me?